Hello, I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, creator of the Incandescent Radio Network, here with my friend and colleague, Tony Farmer, host of the Black Lives Matter radio show. We are thrilled you are here with us today, so let's get started. Hello, and welcome to the Black Lives Matter radio show. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, producer and founder of the Incandescent Radio Network, here with Tony Farmer, the host of the show, and the wonderful Sharifa Hardy, who is our guest for the day. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Sharifa and then turn it over to Tony, who will take the Q&A on the road. She is a business consultant, author, talk show host, and producer of Busy Girls Productions, that's B-I-Z-Z-Y, and she will be a candidate for the 2022 California State Senate District 30. This diversity and inclusion specialist shares her thoughts on being a small business owner in her books, Signs You Might Be an Entrepreneur, How to Discover the Entrepreneur in You, and her ebook, Everything You Need to Know About Social Media Marketing. Her next big goal, as I said, is to be a politician. She ran for Long Beach City Council in 2020, and we're looking forward to seeing her go to the heights that she hopes to go. So I'm going to throw it over to Tony and take it away.
Ms. Sharifa, I'm so excited and happy to have you on the show this evening. And I just kind of want to, I'm so excited. I said that once. It's ridiculous how excited I am. You are like a celebrity and maybe the first celebrity in your particular genre. So that's really kind of got my energy high. And I know just from the brief amount of research I've done that Mondays are your high energy day. So I'm transferring some of my energy to you so that you can kind of get prepped for tomorrow. But jumping right in, the first thing I was really curious about is what made you want to be a politician?
Well, first of all, let me start off by saying thank you for the opportunity to be on the show. Thank you for the invitation. And I understand the reference to Mondays because it's something I always talk about on the show. You don't want to be on my Monday or my Friday show. Because on Monday, I had way too much sleep. And Friday, I haven't had enough sleep. So those are the days when I never know what I'm going to say. But, you know, you never know what I'm going to say anyway. But Sundays, I like kind of sleep all day. But I'm up. I've been moving. I have a photo shoot tomorrow for my Senate pictures to be a candidate. So I've been doing a lot today. So it's good. I'm excited. Now, what made me decide to be a politician? I always look at it like it's not politics, it's people. Mm. I've been helping people for a long time. I don't get caught up in Democrat, Republic. I'm trying to unite people. So that's my passion. That's what I've done through helping entrepreneurs. That's what I do through working with small business owners, because small business owners are the heart of America. And we all know what happens if our heart stops, we die. Yeah. And so that's what's happening now. So we have to be able to find and create new small business owners. And so as a politician, that's one of my primary focuses, because for me, I was laid off 8 times and people were like, wow. And I'm like, but it's not that rare. Most people these days have been laid off a time or two. And so right now, I believe that just about every American is just about one paycheck away from being homeless. You know, and I was homeless. I lost everything. I lost everything except for the clothes that I had on my back. And so I want to be able to create jobs with a living wage so that people aren't in the same situation that I was in.
That's awesome. You know, back in 2009, I got laid off for the first and only time in my entire life, in my entire working career. And it was devastating emotionally, devastating mentally. And it took me a little bit to rebound from that. Thank goodness that I was able to kind of leverage the support from my family, you know, to kind of get through it. It was a hardship, but not one that was insurmountable. Give us some lessons learned from the times that you've been laid off and what you try to educate people on who are going through the same thing.
First of all, the main thing that I like to get people to understand is something that you mentioned, and that is the emotional effect, whether it's one time, 3 times, 8 times, it doesn't matter. People do not acknowledge the emotional effect of being laid off, because it was something that was really unheard of until we went into about 2008, where almost everyone was laid off. And so prior to that, if you left a job, you were usually, you either were fired or quit. right? So if you were fired, even if you didn't admit it to anyone else but yourself, you knew that you did something wrong. When you quit a job, typically you quit for a reason. Maybe you're going back to school, you're moving cross country, you're going to be a stay-at-home dad. Whatever it is, it's usually your choice to leave that position. But when you're laid off, it's due to circumstances outside of your control. I remember some of the times I was laid off, perfect attendance awards, employee of the month award, and you think your life is certain. I laugh and I tell people I used to really think my debit card was magic. It's just like this magical card because I never checked my bank balance. Like, this is 2001. Life is good. I didn't have to go and wonder if I could buy that 1999 shirt. You know, I couldn't go buy the Lamborghini, but I could buy a pair of pants if I wanted to without having to make sure, okay, you know what I mean? I still need to eat. So it was a different time, and it affects you mentally because you know it wasn't anything that was your fault. And the people who laid you off, they feel bad too. Some of the companies relocated. So one went from California to Fort Lauderdale, Florida. You can keep your job if you relocate from California, you know, Los Angeles to Chatsworth, California. These are long commutes. So emotionally, it affected me. And so one of the things that I like to tell people who are going through that same experience is that focus on the skills that you have. That's what you see a lot of people doing right now. During this global pandemic, you have seen more people utilize their creative side than ever before. And more millionaires are made through a recession than any other time in history, because people have to utilize their creativity in order to survive. And that's what we're seeing right now, not to go into a specific theory, but it's survival of the fittest. People who are using their creativity are surviving and thriving right now. People who just sit at home and stuck, feeling sorry for themselves, not taking a, you know, initiative, are the people who are really suffering right now.
Awesome. Let me ask you this. You do so many things. You are a person that certainly a person like me would like to, you know, model his career, his business, his interests after. Who is your role model or role models? Who inspires you?
It's so many. I mean, I wouldn't even know where to start. You know, and I'm not a celebrity. I inspire people like generally. I don't think people are like, oh, Sharifa Hardy did this. But I like to be an example for people going through that path. But I will give you an example of one of the things that I live by, that I truly live by. It was a quote that I've read that Oprah said. Mm-hmm. And what she said is, most people, when they don't know what to do, they have to do something. Mm-hmm. She said, I don't do anything until I know what to do. And so that's one of the things I try to, you know, and it's like your grandmother would say, be still, you know what I mean? Peace, be still. Oh, yeah. Yeah. So it's like the same thing that I've just learned, especially as I get older, you know, 44 now. So I'm over the you know, young people club, but I've just kind of learned to just be still and just wait and see what the next move is, instead of being so anxious and like, oh, I got to do something. I got to figure out how I got to, you know, I'm not in that energy anymore. And those are the people that I work with.
Awesome. Well, again, let me just say that part of what makes your story appealing to me is that there aren't a lot of people that I had growing up to look up to, right? Mm-hmm. Particularly, as you say, in my age group and my generation group, you know, people who were doing things that I wanted to do. And then I realized, oh, I just hadn't found my tribe yet, right? Mm-hmm. I haven't found the people who had the general interest that I had. And so tell us about the people, your support mechanism. Tell us about how you create your team and how you coach them and you know, keep their minds, you know, lifted and looking forward.
Wow, that's a very interesting question, a question that I have not been asked before. But to answer that question, I would have to just simply say everybody's busy. You know, there isn't anybody on my team who's sitting around wondering what tomorrow is going to bring. We got work to do today. So they've seen the growth. They've seen, you know, where we came from. They've seen, you know, where we are right now. Like I talk about one of my graphic designers, my website designer. We've worked together building websites since 2004. you know, most of the people around me, these aren't people I just met yesterday trying to figure it out. The people have seen my journey. They saw when I worked for the television network, we did an IPO, raised $6 million. They've seen my growth. They saw when I launched my first radio show in 2009. And I've even coined a new phrase out of it. You know how people say you shouldn't have yes people around you. I tell everybody I have yes, but people around me. all the people around me, I'd be like 3 o'clock in the morning. I'd be like, Tony, I got an idea. I got to tell you about it. I think that's what we should do. And so all my team, they listen to me and they go, okay, Sharifa, yes, let's do it. But let's think about this, because they know one way or another, I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to step out. I'm going to take a turn, because nobody expected me to run for city council. So they dang sure didn't expect me to run for Senate. So they know, okay, Sharifa's about to do this. So let's figure it out in a way that it's going to be successful, because I am quick to be like, okay, if y'all don't get on board. But I don't really, I've never been one of those people who consciously, and I'm not saying it's right for whoever or wrong for whoever's listening, but I don't typically focus on how to inspire a team or what motivates the team. I'm out in the field making it happen, almost like that drill sergeant, like, let's go, let's keep, you know, and as a result, they're motivated.
Right. Is anything that surprises you about what you've been able to accomplish? Anything that you look back on and you go, wow, that was incredible. That was a landmark moment in my life. Anything specific jump out?
Everything. My whole life. This is like a landmark. And I say that with all humbleness, because I tell people the things that never happen always seem to happen to me. I don't know why. I always wind up in these opportunities, in these situations. Even the fact that I built my first website in 1994, I was a visionary. I was way ahead of my time. But everything happened for the same reason after that, is because my kids were like, Mom, what are we having for dinner? And I was like, dang, I got to feed these kids. Let me figure it out. And then I will always find some new opportunity, some new journey that I'm proud of. I work for TWA, for Transworld Airlines, right out of high school, 18 years old. I've been to just about every state in the U.S. So I've met a lot of people. I'm extremely proud of that. Even though it was 18 years ago, I ran for Long Beach City Council. I'm extremely proud of that. Able to raise, like I said, $6 million in an IPO, one of the first African-American companies to qualify under Regulation A+. Extremely proud of that. It's so much that I've done that I'm just proud of, because I never set out to be a talk show host. I'm doing a talk show right now that no one in the world is doing. And I'm excited by that. And it's not to negate anyone else's show or podcast, but what we do on the Roundtable Talk Shows, we take five complete strangers with absolutely no topic, and we throw them into a roundtable discussion, and somehow, some way, magically, just everybody, we have so much in common. We have so much more in common than we have that's different. And every day, weekdays at 8 a.m., we prove that to the world. Our guests prove that to the world. It's just amazing. And I love what I do.
Awesome. You know, one of the things you mentioned was your kids. And when I am in my coaching experience, when I have my coaching hat on and I'm, you know, coaching women who have kids and who are striving to be the best versions of themselves that they can be, there is another, I'll call it a vacuum, where young women are looking up, okay, I have children, I'm a mom, I'm dedicated to that, but I also have these aspirations, right? When you run into young mothers who want to be a good mom, but also have these aspirations in the business arena or the entrepreneurial fora, what do you tell them?
When you ask, or is the question that you're asking me, can they do both at the same time?
No. When you were asked for advice from those women, what do you share with them? How do you balance those?
How do you balance being a mom and being a success?
Yes.
One of my biggest weaknesses is that I oversimplify things. To me, most things are simple. It's easy, but it's not always that easy for everyone, because my focus or my idea is this: you have to be whole. You have to be a whole person, because children are the most resilient beings on the face of this earth. All that a child needs is love. You'll see a child that has been abused all his life by a parent. If you take that parent away, that child is still going to cry and scream and demand to bring that parent back, because that's the only thing that that child knows. So if you're a loving parent and you're a good parent and you're trying to be a role model to your child, showing your child what a success is, that child will be okay. It's only when a child is not loved that they begin to have all these other issues. So if you're doing you and you're happy, then you're an example for your children.
Got you. So basically, love yourself, you know, take care of yourself, make sure you are maintaining your level of self-care, and then transfer that onto your children. And it sounds like that's been your key, right? Am I stating that correctly?
Absolutely.
Yes. So tell us, what do you do for self-care? What do you do to take care of Ms. Sharifa?
I had to laugh at that because we've been joking about that all yesterday, because I'm like, you know what? And when I come up with ideas, I tell you, my friends are like, Sharifa, we don't know if you're serious or joking sometimes. I'm like, no, but I'm going to petition the Olympics to add sleeping as a sport. Like that's my thing right there. You know what I mean?
Like
I really, to a certain extent, only work an hour a day. You know, I have one show a day at 8 o'clock in the morning, and that's it. After that, all I do is answer emails. And so emails can be answered at any time of the day. So I'm known, you know, and I'm really into astrology, zodiac. I'm an Aries. Aries is the infant. So I work, I eat, I sleep. I work, I eat, I sleep. I work, that's what I do. Like, I'm a baby, you know? So to me, it's like, I get way too much rest. I don't need to add. I mean, I do meditation in the morning. Like, I'm a pro at self-care. Like, I got a perfect 10. The judges have scored me.
Well, listen, when you get that petition put together, call me. I want to sign it as well, because let me tell you, when it's time to rest, I can for sure shut it down, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So tell us about the roundtable. Tell us how that started, and tell us a little bit about, you know, what that means to you.
I'm going to tell you about that, but I want to go back to the sleeping real quick in a serious way.
Yes.
One of the things that I want to tell entrepreneurs is that you and I were jesting, we're joking about the whole sleep thing, but we have bought into the idea that if you're an entrepreneur, you have to go 24/7. We have this energy where we go, people will tell you, got to be a hustler, you got to be up, money don't sleep. And the thing is, when that's a shift. You understand, when you become successful, when you can make that shift between I work 24 hours and I have business hours, and I have business hours. I recommend to all of my clients, set business hours. My business hours are 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., Monday through Friday. So I reserve the right to not do any business for any reason during any other part of that time. And I let people know that up front, because you will burn out if you do not set boundaries, and you will also not be able to have a work-life balance. You'll be all work, and then 10 years from now, you're going to figure out, okay, why am I unhappy? Because you're trying to make sure you get that money. And so you're chasing the money as opposed to saying, you know what, at 6 o'clock, I'm off. So if I want to have date night with hubby, or if I want to take the kids out or whatever it is, I have that time, and you have that time to sleep and to rest. So for me, to answer your actual question, I launched the roundtable talk show after my run for Long Beach City Council. And I tell all my guests this all the time. I said they would not give me city council, so I took the roundtable. But I am going to have a platform to have a voice to discuss current events and what's going on in the world. And that was my thing. I realized during the city council process is that it's up to all of us, not just a city council person, not just the mayor, not just the governor, not just the senator, not just the president. Each and every one of us has to say, you know what? What can I do to solve this problem? You know, on the roundtable talk show, that's why I have 5 guests. I can ask you your opinion, Anthony, on what makes the best podcast host, but what's true for you may not be true for Hope. So Let me ask Hope the same question and see what her response is. And then you may hear Hope's response and say, you know what? I never thought about it like that. Hope may hear your response and say, I never thought about it like that. And then you walk out of the roundtable discussion going, okay, I learned something. And I started doing the show that way. And I wanted to do it that way because I felt like if we can bring, especially in a global pandemic, if we could share our information, we will all be more successful, because this is one of those times. And again, I don't know about you, but I've never experienced something like this in my life. So I had to be like, yeah. I had to be like, yo, Tony, what's going on? You know what I mean? What's happening? What you do? What do you need? Talk to me.
For sure.
That's where the Roundtable Talk Show came. And then my show that came out of the Roundtable Talk Show is Face-to-Face Talk Show. And that came because when I was doing Roundtable Talk Show, the George Floyd tragedy happened. And people wanted to discuss George Floyd. People wanted to discuss police brutality, racial injustice. People wanted to discuss Black Lives Matter. And I said, okay, I do not want to put people in. How do I know Tony wants to talk about that? You know, maybe he just wants to talk about his podcast. Maybe he just wants to talk about his book or his business, or he sells ice cream. I don't know. But I didn't want to put people and force people to be in a position to discuss something that was outside of their realm of expertise. And it was also subjects that, you know, people will say you don't discuss certain things in mixed company. And so I didn't want to force people to do that. So I created Face-to-Face Talk Show as a completely separate show. And this show is different. There's no niceties. There's no, we know we're going to play nice. We're going to, no. Face-to-Face Talk Show is a face-to-face discussion about racial injustice in America, and it can get heated. But the majority of the people on the show are regular guests. So they come together every Wednesday at 10 o'clock to have these discussions. And it may have, you know, stemmed from something Tony said last week. I'll be like, wait a minute, Tony. We ran out of time last week. So let me holler at you this week.
You know? Let's get to it.
Yes. So that's that show. And I love it. It's just my baby, because it really is. We have the uncomfortable conversations. We ask the hard questions, but change starts with the conversations, just like Black Lives Matter, like your show. You have to talk about it. And what's interesting to me is I've been asked to speak on so many different race relations panels, and so many of them, I felt, and no offense to anyone, they missed the point. They missed the mark. They missed the opportunity that could have been different, because so many people put together panels, I felt, with only Black people, because they wanted to hear, you know, Black people's thoughts. But I went, okay, but if you're going to have the conversation, you can't just have Black women talking about race. You got to have white women and white men and Black men, and, you know, Hispanic people, all to say, okay, well, that's your experience in America. Let's talk about it. So my co-host, Paul Faust, for a Face-to-Face Talk Show, he doesn't like me to say he's a white guy, but just for reference, because he's always saying, he's like, Sharifa, I'm a human. It's only the human race. And I'm like, sounds good, Paul. But he lives in New York, or he just moved or something. But he sees the world from his perspective. And we've been doing this show for months. And he'll tell you on every show, he's like, I have learned so much, because he's like, you know, I live to a certain extent in a bubble. And in his bubble, so many, and I've met so many people over the last few months who said the same thing, that they kind of woke up to this idea that racism in America exists. And then I would ask that, okay, but like this lady told me, she says, well, I didn't know, Sharifa, I just didn't know. So I asked her, I said, you know, I just want to know from my perspective and from my curiosity, which part exactly did you not know? Which part did you miss? Which part did you not understand specifically, so I can explain it to, was it slavery? Was it civil rights? Was it Jim Crow? Was it the 13th Amendment? Like, let's break it down to what you didn't know, so I can explain that to you. But I met so many people that really, Sharifa, I didn't know. I had no idea. And I'm like, this is interesting. But it's new, because we now have, and when I say we, I'm going to speak for Black women in general, and to a certain extent, Black men. So Black people.
Yeah, can put me on your tribe, please. I don't know what the application fee is.
But but we have the opportunity to verbalize and to speak in a way that we've never in history had before. I remember sitting on one panel where a lady was talking about microaggressions. And And she was talking about, she said, I don't like when I go into the store and people watch me as I wander around the store, like I might steal something. Or when I go to get, you know, maybe get real estate, and because of my zip code or whatever, I can't get a property. Or when I try to go get a bank loan for my business, they turn me down because I'm Black. So that was her response. And I told her, I said, sister, you know, I agree with you. I understand microaggressions. I said, but to me, microaggressions are not a concern of me. I don't consider or think about microaggressions, because my focus is, I don't want your loan. I want my bank, right?
Right.
So I got my own bank. I don't need your money, right? I don't need you to watch me walk around the store, because it's my store. I own this store, right? So that's my mindset of ownership. And I don't, so microaggressions are absolutely no concern. I focus on getting people to understand ownership and generational wealth. When you understand those two things, you change the mindset. And I'm one of those people, being a Black woman, that a lot of Black people do not want to have a conversation with me because they will get their feelings hurt. Do not have a conversation with me about how often or how long money circulates in the Black community. I don't want to have the conversation about why Black people buy Jordans and iPhones. So my response is always this: the issue is not that they buy Jordans or that they bought that iPhone, is that they have no discretionary income. So when a person of another race buys a plate, and I'm talking about a plate that you eat off, and that plate, that one plate cost $5.5 million, nobody has an issue. When you go look at all the sultans and of Brunei and all those people in Dubai and the things that they do with their wealth, nobody has an issue with it. When people like Jeff Bezos buy what he wants to buy, nobody has an issue with it. But the issue is when Brother Man goes and buys his Jordan, he has to take his Jordan's money from the rent money. So now wifey is mad because they homeless, right? So what you have to do is fix all the things in America that broke the Black family and broke the Black man and build him up so he has enough discretionary income. So when he wants his Jordans, he can buy his Jordans.
You know, Sharifa, you made me think of something. I think that there are always things in life that you, things in life, situations and people that frame who you become, right? And what you represent. And I remember I was talking to this lawyer that I worked for, God, years ago in another lifetime. And he was one of the principals that was instrumental in building one of the huge sports arenas that still stand to this day. And I said to him, I said, well, you know, hey, Peter, when you get that thing built, you know, make sure you save a seat for me. Mm-hmm. And he says something that really kind of completely changed my perspective. He said, Tony, that's the difference between you and I. You want a ticket so you can sit in the seat. I want to own the seat. Right. And so talk about the mindset, right? When you're talking to whoever you're talking to, whoever kind of lands in your path or encounters you and wants to get some wisdom from you, talk to them about the mindset that's required to do the kind of work that you're doing.
The work that I'm doing is just be of service to mankind. I'm just here to help people change their mindset and understand that as a man thinks, so is he. So whatever it is that you're thinking of and think that you can have, that's what you're going to manifest. So your question reminded me of an interview that I did where the gentleman asked me the question. He said, Sharifa, when you ran for office, were you thinking of Shirley Chisholm? Because her whole philosophy was that she wants a seat at the table. She felt that she deserved and that we deserve a seat at the table. I said, I love Shirley Chisholm. Wonderful. I believe in what she had to say, but my philosophy has never been, I want a seat at the table. My philosophy is, I want my table. I don't want your table. I want my table. And the reason I want my table is because if the meeting starts at 3 and I get there at 3:29, if I get there at 4:07, nobody better not be in my seat. That's my seat. That's Sharifa's seat. Because this seat is at the table that Sharifa built.
Right. Right.
So that's a mindset. And to me, again, like I said earlier, I tend to oversimplify things. And mm-hmm. then people ask the question, but Sharifa, how? How do we do it? How do we build it? How do we get our own table? First, you have to decide that you want a table. You have to figure out what you want. I went to a seminar and it was one of those seminars, one of the most, I think, things that really changed my life. It was years ago when The Science of Getting Rich was out. It was a PDF and everybody was so excited about it. And I went to this seminar and the person at the seminar asked the question and everybody in the audience, they asked them, well, what do you want? And one person said, I want $50 million. Okay, well, what do you want? And one person said, well, I just want $100,000. And then another person said, well, I'll take about $1 million. So then the facilitator asked the question, okay, well, what do you want the money for? And so the person said, I want to travel the world. The next person said, I want to travel. I want to send my kids through college. Then the next person said, I want to pay off all of my debt. So then the facilitator said, then what you want is to travel the world. What you want is to send your kids to college. What you want is to pay off your debt. And so often what we think is that we have to get the money to get what we want. If you focus on what you want and are clear on what you want, then what you'll adore or somehow, some way will manifest for you to get what you want. I've seen it in so many different ways and so many different people. Most people who don't wind up getting where they want to go have absolutely no idea where they want to go. Right, you know what I mean? Buying a plane ticket or going to buy a plane ticket without knowing where you want to travel to. It's the same logic, but we do it every day.
Wow, that's awesome. So Sharifa, what is next on your list? What do you want? You're in the Senate seat. What's next after that? What do you look forward to kind of round out this picture of who you've become so far?
It's weird because I have to break things down into little smaller words because I'm like, world domination. Like, that's it. Like, that's
I'll take it. That makes perfect sense to me.
That's the expansion, you know, to be creating jobs. That's what I do.
Yeah, I like that. So you want... So what does, in the smaller chunks, what does world domination look like?
Creating jobs, expanding the talk shows, having a greater reach so we are able to get more entrepreneurs out there in front of our audience so people can learn from it. Just expanding and expanding and expanding on the same message of helping entrepreneurs and being the go-to resource for them.
Well, listen, Hope and I have developed a tradition. We've only been doing our podcast for a short time, but we do have a tradition, and I'm a nonconformist, so the traditions that I do adhere to are important to me.
I'm scared now for some reason. They had a whole lot of preambles, so now I'm nervous. They're going to have me sing the Star Spangled Banner or something. Like, what's up?
No, not yet. I'm a context guy, so it's important. So I usually kind of barrage, I guess, with questions, but I always leave the last question for Hope. And typically Hope asks a question that makes me think and has the guests give us some wisdom that we haven't, kind of thought about before going into the podcast. So Hope, over to you.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you so much for being with us, Sharifa. You are fantastic. So you and I met because I was a guest on your show last week on November 23rd. And it was really, I must say, just a fabulous, exhausting, but fabulous experience because all of us were so on our toes. And I love the format because you set it up so that we really didn't know each other. We introduced each other, and then the conversation completely took off on its own. And it was magnificent. And you said in the beginning, I know that you all will fall in love with each other. And we did, because just when you're open your heart and you're just present, what can't you do? Who can't you meet and connect with? So I think my question for you, and also Tony and I are actually going to be on your show, your face-to-face show on Wednesday. So we're excited about that. So tonight it is November 29th, 2020. We just celebrated Thanksgiving during a pandemic. So my question to you is, what do you see? What's next? Not just for yourself, but for the country, for the Black Lives Matter movement, and for just the future of humankind,
We will unite. Again, I hate to oversimplify things, but we will unite as a people because it to a certain extent is a horrible aspect of humanity, but we come together in tragedy. When something is wrong, we all unite to make this world a better place. And even though people may feel that the Republicans and the Democrats are united, look at families. They may not be able to get together physically, but I gave the example several times on my own talk show. My brother lives in Australia. My brother and I probably talked every few months. During this global pandemic, we talk once a week. Not only do we talk once a week, but my brother, because he just being my brother, he didn't set a scheduled time each week for us to talk. And somehow I just, hey, let's talk, let's have this conversation, you know, and these are maybe 2 hour, 3 hour conversations when we're talking about life and relationships and all those different things. And I really honestly do not feel that it is just us. You have grandparents who are talking to their grandkids on Zoom or on FaceTime. I had the first lady at the church across the street. I was invited to a Zoom birthday party for her. So she had all her family members and church members on this Zoom in something that they wouldn't have done before. It's so many people who are connecting. I had one lady who was a guest on my show. She said that she saw another lady who wrote up this letter and took this letter out to all of the neighbors. And this letter basically said, hi, this is who I am. I want to let you know that if you need anything during this global pandemic, I'm here. Here's my number. And so since the other lady had did it and passed it out, she decided to do the same thing. And she said, Sharifa, you know what happened? She said, I did not get one person. She said, she even put on a letter, especially seniors, like senior citizens, if you're stuck, if you can't go to the store, if nobody cares and left you all alone, call me, I'll be there. She said, I did not get one person, not one person who called me and asked me for help. She said, but I received several phone calls who said, hey neighbor, I live right across the street. We never met, but I just appreciate you reaching out to me. Who are you? What do you do? And so even in the worst of times, in the midst of the darkest times, there's something about the human spirit and that willingness to overcome where we just say, you know what? Let's link arms. Let's come together, you know, in a weird kind of nonverbal way. We start singing, we shall overcome. You know what I mean? And that's what we do as a people. One way, no matter what, somehow, some way, we overcome.
Yeah, and it's wonderful, isn't it? It's like things that you'd never expect, these blessings, these silver linings. My family had a Zoom Thanksgiving, Richmond and Asheville and LA, and here I am in Las Cruces and Phoenix, you know, and it was just really fun. We sat together for about an hour, everybody ate food and just chatted and that.
But you know, not to cut you off, but you know what's interesting about that, Hope, is that Zoom wasn't created for the pandemic. Your family could have done that for Thanksgiving in 2019, you know, but right. Did we as a people? No, we had to be forced through the, you know, this transition, this change to look at what's important to us and go, you know what? We have the technology. And because people are losing their lives, let's look at the people who really matter to us. Let's look in their eyes and say, you know what? I love you, Hope, because you are important to me. You know what, Tony? I love you because you are important to me. And that's the human spirit.
Yes, and it's magnificent. And we thank you so much for bringing your spirit to the Black Lives Matter radio show. I think I just have one more question for you about this topic, about Black Lives Matter. What is your feeling about it? Where do you think it will go? Do you think we will find this unity like you just described, or do you think it's going to be a little bumpy?
I mean, it is going to be a little bumpy. It's been a little bumpy, but humans have the ability to overcome anything. At some point, we will overcome because we're overcoming it right now. If you look at the younger generations, and when I say younger, look at 3-year-olds, 6-year-olds, 9-year-olds, they can't even fathom racism in the ways that some of us, and even at 44, have seen as normal as the difference. It's not in their world. It does not exist. So there are certain people, certain energies, and it's even with the Constitution, certain things that have been written into the Constitution by the people who wrote them that have to die out. They have to go out. And as those people die out, then you have a new generation. You have healing that comes in. And so those are the people that I believe that are going to go ahead and give the reparations that are due to Black people and to help in uniting, because I do feel that we will unite, but you also have to repair and heal the damage that you've done. And one of the examples that I use, because people say, well, maybe, you know, there is no systematic racism, but there are people who have still benefited and profited and got to where they are because of the things that happened in the past. And this, and not to say that, he's racist in any form or fashion, because this is not about race. So please don't misinterpret me. But one of the things that Anderson Cooper is known to have said is that growing up, he didn't want people to know who his mother was. His mother was Gloria Vanderbilt, right? But the point that I'm making is, no matter if you talk about who your mother is or not, you're still the son of Gloria Vanderbilt. You're still reaping the benefits of being Gloria Vanderbilt's son. You're still in that private school where you get a better education because you're Gloria Vanderbilt's son. So that's the thing that I, the point that I try to make to people is, yes, we will heal. We will unite. Definitely will come together, but it's easier to unite and come together when you right the wrongs that have happened to people over time.
Oh, that's amen. Beautiful, beautifully said. Yeah, thank you. And we're here behind you. And, you know, Tony and I talk about this quite a bit. You know, the reason that we started the show together is to give voice to people, all kinds of people, Black, white, especially about diversity and inclusion. And you are our seventh guest, and we're quite honored to have you be that. And we plan to just do this every Sunday night, and we'll see what it evolves into, to your point about opportunity, just sort of showing up when you have an intention. What do you want, right?
You know, before we sign off, Sharifa, you know, Hope and I have these conversations where I'm always feeling like I'm in teaching or coaching mode. And Hope is a very open heart and open mind and kind of wise soul within herself. And there, you know, a lot of things that we talk about are kind of the nuances that happen in communication, particularly within the Black community. And wherever you land on that spectrum, right? The Black community is a broad and wide spectrum, right? And so it's so interesting how you talked about family, you talked about faith, and you talked about investing in both of those things for a united future. You talked about unity. Mm-hmm. And so it's very important for me to kind of point that out, because at the end of the day, Hope and I don't know, you know, how many people are going to hear our Black Lives Matter radio show. We don't know. We hope it expands. We hope, you know, it sits somewhere in the ethos of where your shows are going to be. But it's important to understand, if anybody missed it, the same things that you talked about this evening with us is the same thing that all families talk about. And so we have to find those common threads of faith, family, and unity, and to hear it, you know, whether we're saying it explicitly or not. So
can I ask you something about that? Can I ask you about that?
Yes.
It is, because, again, I oversimplify things. But so I think, again, most people focus on Democrats and Republicans. But at the end of the day, what are Democrats and Republicans? They're made up of people. They're made up of families. So you have to be able to create and build a strong family structure in order to be able to change the society. That's the first thing that I wanted to say. The second thing that I wanted to say is, when I launched my first radio show, which was Ask Sharifa Radio in 2009, I was so excited. I planned and I did all the marketing and I got it out there, and one person showed up to my first show, and my little feelings was hurt, and I was just like, oh my God, I'd spent all this money, I did all this work, I did everything, and nobody showed up for that show. I had one listener, and I began to do the shows, but I began to see that my numbers rose in the archives. So that first show that had one live listener began to have thousands and thousands and thousands of listens. So one of the things that I've done, and to this day, I stick by it. Even on Thanksgiving, people commented, they were like, wow, Sharifa, you are dedicated. You showed up on Thanksgiving. I had actually forgot to like kind of cancel and close it out on my calendar, and right, people booked that day. So I showed up and I said, if anybody shows up, there's a show, because they're right, dedicated. Nobody shows up, we won't have a show. And 4 out of 5 people showed up. So I said, I guess there's a show. But I've learned to give my best show, my best, you know, everything, whether it's one person tuning in or a million people turning in, because you never know, that one person who tuned into that show could be somebody who could change your life. And so I just applaud you for showing up and giving the best show that you can, no matter who tunes in or who listens.
Thank you. Thank you so much for that. And thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule, your Olympic trials.
Yes. I should be practicing right now.
Thank you for taking time out from your practice to hang out with us. We, as Hope said, we are certainly behind you and wishing you the best, and want to position ourselves to support in any way we can. That's all the questions I have for you. Hope, anything else you wanted to add or
I'm very excited.
Wrap up with?
This is just a great, great time to talk about this. You're wonderful. And we look forward to having lots more conversations with you. So we will see you on Wednesday at your show. But for tonight, we close up this episode of the Black Lives Matter radio show with your host, Tony Farmer, and Sharifa Hardy, our guest for this evening. I'm Hope Katz Gibbs, founder of the Incandescent Group and Incandescent Radio. We will talk to you soon. So that's all for today's episode of the Black Lives Matter radio show on incandescentradio.com. We have an amazing lineup of future guests, just like you heard on today's show. So be sure to tune in for another episode and tell your friends about us so they can listen too. If you or someone you know should be a guest on our show, send me an email, hopekatzgibbs@gmail.com, and we'll be in touch. Again, this is blacklivesmatterradioshow.com on the Incandescent Radio Network. We look forward to talking to you. Until then, stay safe and be well.